Monday morning you sure look fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We're in the middle of December now, but things are heating up in the NFL. Week 15 was a doozy for some top seeds, including the top three in the AFC. That's our leading story with the Broncos, Patriots, and Bengals all losing in Week 15. Nobody can take advantage of the seed in front of them getting knocked off. Of course, the Broncos getting knocked off first, so the Patriots seemingly had an opportunity to take home field advantage or at least have the lead for home field. They lose early on Sunday at 1 o'clock, and then the Bengals an opportunity to take a first-round bye and get the second seed with the tiebreaker over New England. They lose as well, so we'll go into depth on all three of those games. In our second segment, the latest debacle in Dallas, and I mean debacle. I've not been one to try and blow up what Dallas has done in the last couple of years. Personally, I think it's overblown. This one, I don't see how you can overblow it. This is a huge loss for Dallas. Tremendous morale hit with this one, the latest blown lead of 23 points at halftime against Green Bay with a backup quarterback in Matt Flynn, of all people, all quarterbacks to come back against or to let come back against you. And it was the Packers and Matt Flynn getting that victory down in Dallas. That is our second segment dedicated just to that. And then in our third segment, we will go to fourth and long, where we discuss Jamaal Charles and his 5 touchdowns on Sunday against the Raiders, the New Orleans Saints, and they're continuing to struggle on the road, and the return of Jay Cutler for the Bears, and a big win for Chicago, getting back into first place for the time being in first place in the NFC North. So let's kick off the show. Let's go back to Thursday night. Now, I know that, you know, it being at least Monday now, Monday morning, or the recording of our show, and then possibly even later, depending on when you listen to our show. So it's been, you know, 5 days at least since the Broncos and Chargers game. It's been analyzed, but I think it's worth going over because of how it relates to the Patriots and Bengals losing. So I'll keep this brief. I was really impressed with what the Chargers were able to do against the Broncos, and I know the immediate fallout on Friday after this game was how the Broncos were playing on a short week and, whatever. All the excuses you want to think about for the Broncos, they were thrown out there in the media. San Diego played an excellent game. Tremendous game plan, and they were able to stick to it because they got out to... I don't want to say they got out to a lead because they didn't. I mean, Denver led this game 10-3, but they were able to stay in the game, and then they got off to a lead because they had a very good second quarter, and very good is an understatement. They had an excellent second quarter. They put Peyton Manning deep in their own territory, forced them to get 3 and outs, had good field position, and took advantage, scoring touchdowns for the most part in this game, and Phillip Rivers was tremendous. And then in the second half, they stuck with the game plan of running the ball. Ryan Matthews was tremendous. He had a 127-yard day, 29 carries. You believe that? 29 carries for Ryan Matthews. The Chargers actually ran the ball as a team 44 times in this game, with Phillip Rivers only throwing it 20 times. It was about 66% run. And in today's NFL, that's just unheard of. And it's just tremendous to see. I'm a fan of running the ball, and I love seeing a team have a lot of success running the ball when a lot of people believe that that's not important in today's NFL. You can still win by playing great defense and running the ball, and that's what the Chargers really did in this game. Peyton Manning, I mean, statistically, he didn't have a fantastic game. I mean, again, I mean, for him, it wasn't a fantastic game. For anybody else, I would say it was a pretty – it was a, at least above average day, I would say. 289 yards, two touchdowns, one interception that was kind of a batted ball late in the game. But for Denver, there was no running attack. You know, they got behind. They got off balance. And I've been saying all year, they only run plays out of the shotgun. And I guess eventually – you know, eventually it was going to catch up to them that they weren't going to be able to run the ball out of the shotgun, and they don't run any other plays, really. And that's kind of what happened in this one. But there's really no excuse to only run the ball 11 times. You heard what San Diego did, running it 29 times with Ryan Matthews alone, and Denver ran it 11 times as a team. So, you know, even though they were behind in this one, and at halftime it was, you know, it was only 17-10. It wasn't like it was a lopsided affair. And then at one point, you know, after the Chargers scored on their first possession of the third quarter, it was 24-10. But still, with no Sean Moreno, there's room to run the ball for the Broncos. They just didn't care to establish him, and he didn't run well on his eight carries. I mean, he only had 19 yards, so a really bad average, and Monte Ball did even worse on his three carries. But you have to be patient in the run game sometimes, and this is what teams do. They get behind, they don't have success running, and they completely abandon it, and that is when you run into problems. And I think Denver in this game ran into problems, partially because of that lack of faith in the running game. Broncos also had a tremendous amount of mistakes in this one, and I think that's what led to the media coming up with all those excuses for them. They got called for 12 men on the field on defense twice. They had they forced San Diego into a punting situation deep in their own territory, and then a player was called offsides on the punt. And it gave the Chargers a first down, which they ate up more clock and then kicked a field goal. That was in the I believe it was the fourth quarter. It was definitely in the second half. So that was a costly mistake as well. To me, this was I would say that this was a San Diego win over a Denver loss. I was impressed with what the Chargers did, and you know, got to look out for them going forward. Playing very well right now, and perhaps San Diego is peaking at the right time. I know San Diego is one of those teams that, you know, they play well when you don't think they will, and then when you expect more, they don't play well. So maybe in the next week or two, they'll go back to being, you know, the Chargers or be the Chargers and blow a chance of making the playoffs. But I have more faith in them, I think, than I did last year or years before because of the new coaching change. Mike McCoy, I think he's got them going in the right direction. But we'll see. Two more weeks in the season. They're 7-7. There's a lot of teams at 7-7. Baltimore hasn't played this week yet as of this recording. So we'll see. We'll see how the chips fall in the next week or so. But I was impressed with the Chargers on last Thursday night. Denver, they're lucky because we're going to talk about New England and Cincinnati, both of them losing, but I'm not impressed with them. You know, I haven't really been impressed with them for several weeks now, and finally I think it's catching up to them. They're not peaking at the right time. This is, honestly, it's typical Peyton Manning, coming out at the beginning of the season really strong, winning a lot of regular season games. And I'm afraid that when it matters most in the playoffs, they're not going to come through. Eventually, they were going to play a team or a game where they had to play more defense. And their defense has been awful. I don't blame Peyton Manning for that. But Peyton Manning can only do so much. You can't outscore people every week. Denver is going to win. They're going to be in another game this year where they're going to have to win with their offense only scoring 20 points. Or maybe 17 points, maybe 24 points in that area. Is that defense going to be able to hold the other team below that mark? Or is it going to be, are they going to give up 27 or 30 and lose a playoff game like that? That would be devastating to this franchise. Then on Sunday, we had the New England Patriots go into Miami. And I think even if you're a Dolphins fan, you're kind of going into this one thinking, okay, we have three division games to end the season, which is kind of rare. New England, then Buffalo, and then to the Jets to close it out at home. if we can win two of those three, probably drop the one against the Patriots, then we have to hope Baltimore loses two of their last three games, which is possible with their schedule, we can get into the playoffs. Well, I think the Dolphins, I mean, not that they got a gift, they played very well, but maybe a pleasant surprise, huge surprise for them that they were able to get this victory against New England. Unlike the San Diego game with Denver on Thursday night, however, I felt like this was a game that New England lost. It wasn't really a Miami win. Now, I hate to take away from what Miami did. They won the game, and congratulations to that team and their fans, if there are Miami fans listening. But for me, the storyline is New England dropping this game. And again, New England has been a team that's been struggling. I haven't been real high on them. I haven't been high on anybody, really, in the AFC. They're a team that's struggled. They haven't put together a full game in a while, in several weeks. And they've been able to come back and win games last week, barely coming back to beat Cleveland. They had to come back with a tremendous second half to beat Denver. That's not typical Bill Belichick football. He wants his teams to play mistake-free, you know, 60 minutes great football. And they haven't done that in a while now. And Brady has, I don't want to say he's been average, but he's somewhat struggled. And he got a lot better as the season went with the return of Rob Gronkowski, a tight end. But without him now for the rest of the season, I think you have to be worried if you're a Patriots fan. I don't think you have to be worried about the division or anything. You're going to the playoffs, and it doesn't look like anybody's going to come from behind and get that first round bye away from you. So that'll be good. You have a home game in the division round. But in terms of getting to the playoffs, in terms of going on the road and beating Denver, if you have to go on the road, I don't think it's going to happen without Gronkowski. The way they played on Sunday, it's not going to happen. Brady, 34 of 55, 364 yards. So, I mean, the yards are there, but two touchdowns and one pick. The one stat that I want to point out to you, I mean, we can run through any of the Patriots stats like I just did. Brady's, I mean, rushing, they didn't do all that well. 96 rushing yards as a team. Tremendous games from Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola. Both had over 10 catches, 130 yards receiving for each of them over that total. But the stat that sticks out to me, and I preach this all the time, but again, it's so important. The Patriots got into the red zone four times on offense, converted to one touchdown. One touchdown. And they also had, this wasn't in the red zone, but they had a missed field goal in this game as well. So, and at the end of the game, despite how poorly you could say that New England played most of the game, again, I'm blowing it a little out of proportion. They didn't play poorly. Poorly, I think, to the standards of Bill Belichick. But yet again, the game was right there for Tom Brady to get with the ball in the red zone with seconds remaining, you know, less than 30 seconds remaining. And you have a chance to get the game-winning touchdown. You're down by four, but you have a chance to go up by three with seconds left. And they were unable to score, like most of the day, unable to score in the red zone. And I'm afraid without Gronkowski, that big target in the red zone, New England is going to have trouble converting on their red zone attempts, and that is just so important in this league. That, I think, is what they're going to miss most from the tight end, is those red zone targets and those touchdowns that he can bring in. And if he doesn't bring in the touchdowns, he brings the coverage towards him or double teams towards him, and it opens up lanes for Shane Vereen, who really didn't do anything in this game, or it opens up a slant route or a little skinny post to a Danny Amendola or a Julian Edelman, which those were not open in this game. Those are the players that they're concentrated on covering. Shane Vereen, another guy that they're covering. And the Dolphins did a great job of stopping those players. One thing that I'll say about the Dolphins, because I don't want to leave them out, they won this game. Ryan Tannehill, tremendous outing for him. Last week in Pittsburgh, it was Daniel Thomas and the running game getting it done. Thomas only had 5 carries in this one for 16 yards. Lamar Miller, struggled again in this one, 15 carries, 61 yards. It was Ryan Tannehill that carried the load, 25 completions on 37 attempts, 312 yards through the air, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He didn't throw for as many yards as Brady did, but he was more efficient. He completed a better percentage of his passes and had more touchdowns and had a higher average per completion as well. So very good game from Tannehill and a game that they really needed from him to get this win. And they're sitting in a really good position to put the pressure on Baltimore. But actually, the Ravens, for the time being, have forgotten about the 6th wildcard spot. They're more concerned about winning the division because the Cincinnati Bengals lost 30-20 on the road to the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday night. And this one looked like it was going to be a blowout. I mean, the box score might tell you otherwise, but it really was a dominating performance from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if you look at just offense and defense and those stats, I mean, it doesn't look like it was really a dominating performance, but some special teams blunders from Cincinnati and Pittsburgh taking advantage of their opportunities, returning a punt for a score, tackling the punter on the 1 yard line, which turned into a 1 yard touchdown run for Le'Veon Bell. And Pittsburgh got off to a great start, 21-0 in the first quarter. Most points given up by the Bengals in the first quarter history for that squad. And then the most points scored by Pittsburgh in the first quarter in that long franchise history. So a really great win for Pittsburgh, and even though it was a meaningless game, it was meaningful for the team to knock off their division rival. And for me, looking at this from Cincinnati's perspective, you have to be worried about what they're going to do on the road in the playoffs. I'm not worried about this team missing the playoffs. I'm not really even worried about them coughing up the division to the Ravens. They play Baltimore at home in the last week. If need be, I think they're going to win that game. But they might not even have to win that game. If Baltimore loses on Monday Night Football to Detroit, I think the division is safely back into the Bengals' hands. And even if Baltimore wins, the Ravens have to host New England next week. And even though New England's struggling, that's going to be a tough one for Baltimore right on a short week against a quality opponent on Monday Night Football on the road. So I would say that with Baltimore's schedule, I think Cincinnati and their home for the rest of the season, the last two games, that they can take care of business and still win the division. But in terms of going to the playoffs, Cincinnati is such a different team at home. Let's take a look at the last couple of games that they've played at home. Okay, against Indianapolis, they score 42 points, win 42-28. Home against Cleveland, 41 points, 41-20. And then all the way back on October 27th, home against the Jets, 49-9. All right, let's do the last 4 road games. At Pittsburgh on Sunday night, 30-20. At San Diego, only score 17 points, but they win 17-10. And then November 10th at Baltimore, lose in overtime 20-17. And then the week prior on Thursday at Miami on Halloween, lost 22-20 in overtime. So they're putting up 20 points, 17 points, 17 points, and 20 points on the road in their last 4 games. At home, they're over 40 in their last 3 games. Huge disparity, at least on offense, in terms of what they do at home and on the road. So they really need to get that home game, win the division, which I think they'll do. But in terms of beating New England or beating Denver on the road the following week in the division round, I don't really see it happening. Now, I know that this is an organization, this is a franchise that many people, I think, would say if they win a playoff game, that's a success for them. This team, in my mind, is more talented than just winning one game. I've been on Cincinnati's bandwagon all season, and maybe I should be off it a little bit. I've talked on the show. I think I talked about it in the off season actually, that if Cincinnati wants to take over the AFC North and be a dominant team in the AFC and as a whole in the conference, they have to beat Pittsburgh and they have to beat Baltimore. They are 9-5 this season. What have they done against Pittsburgh and Baltimore? They are 1-2, 0-2 on the road. They have been unable to go into Heinz Field or go into Baltimore and get a victory. They did go into Heinz Field last year and get a victory and knock Pittsburgh out of the playoffs and put themselves in the playoffs. And I know I talked about last December how maybe it was a changing of the guard. For you loyal listeners, I think you remember me talking about how maybe Pittsburgh was on the downfall and Cincinnati was on the upswing. And that appears to be true based on their records. But I still think for the morale of the Bengals, it was really important to win this game. And they came in flat, and they weren't able to make a comeback and get this win. And although I don't think it's going to cost them the standings, I think they'll be the third seed. I think they'll win the division. I think for their psyche, they needed to win this game. And they didn't get it done. So I don't really know what to expect from the AFC. Again, all three of the top seeds lost. And maybe we'll see some more shuffling among the top seeds, come before playoff time. But maybe the final seeds haven't been stapled in there yet. But in terms of Cincinnati, I think in many ways they're still the same old Bengals. They may be going to the playoffs this year. They may have a home game. They may be favored in a playoff game, and they may even win a playoff game. But they still have a lot of the same characteristics of the same old Bengals. Okay, we're gonna take a break, and then we'll come back, flip over to the NFC, and talk about that collapse that happened in Dallas. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, you can tweet at me, DMHOLCOMB. You can also send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook as well, Dave's Football News. So I'd love to hear from the fans. I always do. I will respond to you. And like last week, I can even get your name called out on the show if you had a really good comment, like some of our past fans who've emailed and tweeted at me specifically. So please get a hold of me. I forgot to bring up in our first segment about the article that I wanted you guys to check out about the Dolphins and Patriots game, written by Doug Tozer. Dolphins foil Patriots comeback attempt for win, what we learned. So he has the five things that we learned from the game. I discussed about a couple of them, also threw in a little bit of my own things that I learned about the Patriots, specifically their red zone offense. And another thing that I wanted you to check out on footballnation.com, my article/video that I did last Friday about James Harrison's return to Heinz Field. Again, didn't mention it in the opening segment, but it's a video I think worth watching, even though the game is past. As relevance to the Steelers and how they've been running their franchise in the last few years. So I think it's one of the better pieces I've written lately. So definitely check that out as well on our site. Moving now into the Cowboys and Packers game. Before I forget, check out Patrick Kahn's article, Green Bay Packers versus Dallas Cowboys, five things that we learned. What did I learn, I should say, specifically about this game? Well, I don't know if we really learned anything new. We've seen this collapse from Dallas before, and I have defended Dallas, okay? I will say that. I have been not a Dallas lover, okay? I am someone that falls in the middle, and one of the rare people, one of the rare fans that fall in the middle on the Dallas Cowboys, okay? I don't think they are God's greatest gift. I don't think Tony Romo is the best thing since sliced bread, okay? He's a decent quarterback. I also don't think he is the biggest choke artist of all time. I don't think the Cowboys are never going to win a playoff game ever again with Jerry Jones. You know, all these things are such extremes to me, okay? It's something in the middle. Tony Romo is a decent quarterback. He's an above average quarterback, right? If you want to get into an argument about is he in the top 10, I don't know, okay? I don't. Maybe he is. He might be on the outskirts of a top 10 quarterback. Is he elite? No. Is he bad? No. Okay. That being said, the fact that the Cowboys lost this game when they were ahead 26-3 at halftime and then ahead 29-10 with 6 minutes left in the third quarter is atrocious. The Packers had no business winning this game. Now, I give the Packers all the credit in the world, but I am going to rip the Cowboys apart for a lot of their decision-making as well. Now, supposedly, Jason Garrett is not calling the plays anymore. It is the offensive coordinator, Bill Callahan, which I think is true. I'm not speculating that it's not him. It is Callahan. What the heck is he thinking on some of these calls? Okay, and I'm not just talking about the end of the game. I'm talking about the whole second half game plan. We talked about how great the Chargers game plan was and how they stuck to it with their play calling, running the ball with Ryan Matthews and eating up clock and keeping Peyton Manning off the field. Well, I know that you're playing a Packers offense that is not that good with Matt Flynn, but you have a, 23-point lead and then a 16-point lead with about 20 minutes left in the game. What are you doing running the ball? Or what are you doing not running the ball? What are you doing passing the ball three times on a series inside your own 10-yard line or inside your own 20, and then you get sacked and you're pushed back inside your own 10-yard line? That was a series that they had late in the third quarter. That, I think, Troy Aikman very smartly brought up at the end of the game is the turning point. Yeah, you can point to the two interceptions. You can point to the Cowboys continuing to not want to run the ball, which is all true. And the interceptions kill you. They kill you late in the game when you throw a pick like that. But the truth of the matter is, I think this game was lost in the third quarter, in the beginning of the fourth quarter, where Green Bay came back, made this a game, scored very quickly, even with Matt Flynn. 3-yard touchdown pass to tight end Andrew Corliss, a guy that's playing in place of another injured Packer in JerMichael Finley, 29-17 Dallas. And then about 4 minutes later, 12:47 left in the game, James Starks, 11-yard pass caught from Matt Flynn, 29-24. And you think, okay, Dallas will now take control of this game, you know, run the clock out, go down for a score. They got lucky on a couple of calls. There was an interception that was overturned. There was a false start that wasn't called a false start. It was called an offsides on Green Bay that gave Dallas a first down on 3rd and 5. Again, maybe Dallas would have converted it anyway. You never know. But they didn't even have to because they gave them a first down. Went down the field. Dez Bryant, fantastic touchdown catch. Tony Romo, not a great throw, but he threw it in the area of Dez Bryant so he could make a play. And that, to me, is a great throw from a quarterback. It wasn't precise and accurate and right where, you know, the receiver made a perfect catch, but it was in the vicinity, and a great athlete like Bryant made a play on the ball. And that was fantastic. You're up by 12 with less than 8 minutes to go. Now close the game. James Jones, 3-yard touchdown pass with 4 minutes left, brought Packers back within 5. And then on the next series, again, Dallas did not want to run the ball. They're trying to get a first down on a pass, and they were bailed out again, I believe it was by a penalty. And you think, okay, now they're going to get the now they're going to run out the clock. And on a passing play, Clay Matthews comes completely free off the edge. Romo avoids the sack and then throws what looked like to be a really big splash play to Miles Austin, and then it gets picked by Sam Shields, who just has tremendous closing speed. So I don't want to – I guess you can't blame Tony Romo completely for that throw. I mean, Miles Austin was open, but Sam Shields' closing ability just – boom, 1 second he was open, then he wasn't. Interception, Green Bay goes down the field, scores the go-ahead touchdown, doesn't get the two-point conversion, so it's a one-point play. Dallas can still go down the field. Tony Romo can be the hero, lead him down the field. Dan Bailey, who was excellent in the game, two field goals from over 50 yards already in the game, get him into field goal range. Bailey can hit a 50-plus field goal, and Dallas wins. What does he do? He throws another interception. Game over. Green Bay is alive and well in the NFC North, and Dallas unable to take advantage of an opportunity with the Eagles losing earlier in the day. That should be it's the theme of the episode. Unable to take advantage of your chances with your rivals losing. It happened in the AFC. It happened in the NFC as well this week. I will say, there was one play call that I liked from Bill Callahan in the fourth quarter. To start that last drive, actually, I think it was the second to last drive. The second to last drive, when Dallas was still ahead, they were up 36-31. And everyone kind of thought, okay, Dallas is going to run the ball. The first play that they ran was a play action deep pass to Dez Bryant that was just a little bit underthrown from Romo, and Bryant couldn't bring it in. It was one-on-one coverage. It was Sam Shields, again, made a nice play with his closing speed. I think that was a good play call. But then on second and third down, you got to run the ball. Okay, you got to eat some clock. You took your shot down the field to try and get a big play. You don't continuously try and get that big play when you're up by five in the closing minutes. And if you're Tony Romo, I know it's not his fault. I don't blame him completely, because Sam Shields made a nice play. And again, on the last drive with the Packer cornerback, Tremone Williams, he made a great play as well. So you have to give credit to the Packers. But at some point, Romo's got to be responsible for that. Romo's got to say to himself, do not throw a pick. Just don't do it. Throw it away. Take a sack. Let Clay Matthews hit you. Yeah, that's not the worst play in the world. It's a, what, five-yard loss, but the clock runs. And that's what you're playing against at that point in the game, the clock. I think this is the worst blown loss I've seen the Cowboys have. And there's been a lot of them. You can't have a lot of faith going forward. I mean, you didn't have a lot of faith in their defense to start with. And yes, the defense blew this game, but I think this game was lost on the offensive side of the ball from Dallas, unable to close it with an effective running game. And it's not like, you know, you can even point to DeMarco Murray and say that he struggled. You know what Murray did in this game? He had 18 carries for 134 yards. That's an average of 7.4 yards per carry. And that was it. That was the only rushing attempts in the whole game for Dallas. 18 from Murray. That's it. 48 pass attempts from Romo. You had a 20-point lead and you only ran the ball 18 times. I don't understand what Dallas is play calling. I don't get it. I don't understand. And we can even go to past games where I just have not gotten it. We talked about in the New Orleans game, and I didn't harp on it as much as I'm harping on it now, but when we talked about that they got killed by New Orleans on Sunday Night Football, they seemed to not want to pass. Even when they were losing by 20, all they wanted to do was run. And yes, they had some good plays running. They had an effective running game. But you can't continue to run when you're down by 20. When you're up by 20, you pass. I don't get it. I don't understand. And it's going to cost Jason Garrett his job. I think if the Cowboys don't make the playoffs, he's out. I don't think he should be. But I think Jerry Jones is going to go crazy. And he's going to fire him. He's probably going to fire Monty Kiffin and wish that he could bring back Rob Ryan, but that's not going to happen. And, at this rate, Bill Callahan's probably going to be gone too. Right now, Dallas is a mess. And they're lucky because Philadelphia lost. They still control their own destiny, even at 7-7. But as a Cowboy fan, I would think you don't have a lot of faith in anything right now, especially not the defense, but even in Tony Romo. You can't have much faith in the offense and the play calling or anybody. Let's briefly switch over to the Packers now, which, by the way, they won this game. It wasn't just Dallas losing. Tremendous game from Matt Flynn. Even if they ended up losing this game, I think the fact that they came out in the second half and showed up to play, Matt Flynn brought them back. He threw for 299 yards, four touchdowns, just one pick, 27 completions on 39 attempts. Eddie Lacy had a second half of his life, 21 carries, 141 yards in the game, and had a touchdown. Most of that, almost all of it, came in the second half. So I think the Packers had just a lot to be proud of in that second half to come back and make that a game. And the fact that they won, they're right in the thick of things in the NFC North. We talked about it last week, but now that they're 7-6-1, they have two very winnable games left. I know the last week of the season against Chicago will be a tough one. Chicago winning, we'll get to them in the next segment. Chicago 8-6, Detroit playing Baltimore on Monday night. They could possibly be 8-6. At worst, they're 7-7, and the Packers are a half game in front of them. Packers, you know, I think it's tough on them because they don't play the Lions, and actually the Lions don't play Chicago either, so maybe it's tougher on Detroit because they don't get to play these two teams that they're possibly will be behind if they lose Monday. But for Green Bay, again, the whole goal was to stay afloat. Stay afloat until Aaron Rodgers can play. And we talked on the last episode that, again, they were able to stay afloat, and Aaron Rodgers is going to come back next week. Well, Aaron Rodgers wasn't back in this game, but they won again somehow. They're staying afloat. They're alive. And if they can get Aaron Rodgers back, I think they will beat the Steelers at home. And who knows what will happen in that last week. It very well could be for the division. That last week between Chicago and Green Bay, that's for the NFC North. And with Aaron Rodgers, you got to put your money on Green Bay, I would think. And if they can get into the tournament, if they can get into the playoffs, and especially if they can get into the playoffs and have a home playoff game in the first round, you got to like Green Bay's chances with Aaron Rodgers under center, if he's there. If he's there. It seems to be a big if. But I think at some point he's going to come back, and the Packers could be very dangerous. We're going to take another break, and then we'll come back with our fourth and long segment. We're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. Your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget my Twitter handle, DMHOLCOMB. You can also email me, HolcombMDavid@gmail.com. We're going to move into our fourth and long segment. We're going to stay in the NFC North. I feel like we're going to be talking about this division a lot in this last 2 weeks of the regular season. This being, I guess, third to last week. I'm talking about the next 2 weeks. But we're going to go to Jay Cutler and the Chicago Bears. My statement: Mark Trestman and the Bears made the right choice in starting Jay Cutler for the rest of the regular season, you know, it's going to be hard to say punt this away and disagree with the way Cutler came back and did very well at the end of that game against Cleveland. But I am still skeptical about the Jay Cutler, you know, moving him back into the starting position. I would have stuck with Josh McCown. I think he has the hot hand. He is more like, I just think he has a better shot of leading this team to the playoffs right now than Jay Cutler does. Do I think Jay Cutler is an inferior quarterback to Josh McCown? Absolutely not. I do not think McCown is a better quarterback than Jay Cutler. On paper, you know, you looking at their skill set, if you see both of them throw next to each other, and if you look at their body of work throughout their career, Cutler is clearly the better quarterback. But in this situation, I'm talking who can get me 3 wins in the next 3 weeks, and now who can get me 2 wins in the next 3 weeks since Cutler got me this win on Sunday? I would say McCown has the slight edge. I think Jay Cutler is starting because of the contract situation. I think if Cutler didn't come back to start, if Mark Trestman stayed with Josh McCown, then he would kind of be admitting that the team doesn't need Jay Cutler. The team can let Jay Cutler go in the offseason. And I think Mark Trestman really wants Jay Cutler. And who can blame him? I think in the future, next season, this should be Cutler's team. I don't think you want to count on McCown for a whole year. All I'm saying in this argument is that McCown has the hot hand. He's been playing very well. I would have stuck with him for this game. And in the first quarter, it really looked like it was the wrong decision to have Jay Cutler come back and play and start. But Cutler rewarded the patience of Mark Trestman and the entire Bears, you know, really the entire organization and fan base with 3 touchdowns later in the game after throwing 2 interceptions. He got a touchdown to both Marshall and Jeffrey. I think both those, I don't know what the reaction was to by Marshall and Jeffrey when they found out Cutler was starting, because you got to think in their minds, you know, the offense is moving really well with McCown. Maybe we should stick with him. I think especially Jeffrey, who's a younger guy that doesn't have as much experience with Cutler. Yeah, what he's been doing with McCown was outstanding. And he wasn't really involved early on as well, and he only had 5 targets in the game, but he caught all 5 of those for 72 yards and a touchdown, another amazing touchdown grab, and Marshall 95 yards and a touchdown for him. So I think because they won the game, because Cutler came back and played well, you know, this decision is kind of a moot point at this point. But we'll see the next 2 weeks, especially if it comes down to the final week against the Green Bay Packers. Starting Cutler instead of McCown could be a huge decision. By the way, the Bears play the Philadelphia Eagles next week on Sunday night. I have a feeling that might be our leading story on next week's episode. Okay, we're going to stay in the NFC now in what was another, I would say, big upset from Sunday's action. And really a surprise in the score as well. The St. Louis Rams, who have kind of been a thorn on a lot of teams' side this year, they're a better team than what people give them credit for. They're 6-8 now with the win over the New Orleans Saints. They defeated the Saints 27-16, and at one point they led 27-3, so really dominating the first 3 quarters of play. Now, my statement: Saints fans should be worried if New Orleans has to go on the road in the first round of the playoffs. I'm grunting. I agree. This team, very similar to Cincinnati, is not the same team on the road as they are at home. You can say the same thing about Seattle, okay? Seattle, a tremendous home field advantage. New Orleans and Cincinnati, the same. But on the road, Seattle, although they're both their losses on the road, they're still a very good team on the road. Just ask the New York Giants. But for New Orleans and for Cincinnati, this is now really the second road game in a row for the Saints where they really played below average and did not play well at all. I mean, 16 points for the Saints against the Rams. I mean, the Rams are good, but they're the Rams. They're still not, you know, one of the premier teams in the league. And now if you go really back to the last three, even the last four road games that the Saints have had, they've scored 16 points, 7 points, 17 points, which they got a win in Atlanta with 17 points, but only 17, and then 20 in New York where they lost to the Jets. And the road game prior to that, they scored 27 but lost to New England. So this is a team that's really been struggling on the road, and they have what could be their biggest road test the entire season, I guess maybe besides Seattle, in Carolina next week. So again, that scenario where I said that they would go on the road in the first round of the playoffs, well, that would happen if they lose to Carolina next week in Carolina. So with Carolina beating the Jets pretty handedly, that was at home. You know, I'm kind of leaning Carolina. I know we talked about last week's show how it was a New Orleans type game. They got out and scored early, and Carolina wasn't able to convert touchdowns. And that was kind of a similar thing in the Jets game. Early on, Carolina was kicking field goals. But I think at home, they're going to be up for this game. The Saints will be up for it too. But I just have a feeling that Carolina is going to come away with a win next week with the Saints and their struggles on the road. One thing I will say, perhaps New Orleans with the big win last week against Carolina and a big game coming up against Carolina, maybe they were looking past the Rams. Perhaps. But I don't buy that because I just said the last four or five games, they've struggled on the road. So I really don't buy that they, you know, were kind of looking past the Rams. I just think they were flat out beat on the road. They're not as good of a team outside of the Superdome. And even if you go back to their prior two road games, even if you look at all their road games, not just the recent ones, all of them, the Saints have struggled. They only scored 16 in Tampa Bay in week two. And against Chicago, 26 points. I don't want to say 26 points is struggling, but at home at that point in time, they're scoring 31 points, 38 points, 35 points, 49 points against the Cowboys. So a much different team on the road. For this last statement, we're going back to the AFC for a old-time AFL rivalry game that took place on Sunday between the Chiefs and Raiders. We actually got the most points in that rivalry of all time, with the Chiefs winning that one 56-31. Jamaal Charles, a career day, 8 catches for 195 yards receiving, 4 touchdowns, and then rushing the ball. He only had 8 carries for 20 yards, but added another score. So 5 touchdowns on the day. The last time somebody had 5 touchdowns in a game, actually, you have to stay in the same division in a Chiefs game, but it was done against them by a Denver Bronco running back, Clinton Portis, on December 7th in 2003. That was the last time somebody got 5 touchdowns. My statement, you know, Jamaal Charles got his 5th touchdown in the middle of the third quarter. He could have very easily... Oh, okay, it wasn't at the middle. It was with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. He could have very easily gone for a 6th, even a 7th touchdown. The Chiefs scored 2 more touchdowns in the game, and they were by running backs. So that could have very easily been Jamaal Charles. My statement, Andy Reid was in the right, to not go for that rushing, or not rushing, but single-game touchdown record, which is held by Gale Sayers. he scored 6 touchdowns for the Bears in a game against the 49ers on December 12th in 1965. No other player has scored more than 6 or even tied Sayers with 6 in that time. A bunch of players with 5, including now Jamal Charles, but Sayers the only one with 6 in one game. I agree with Reed's decision in not going for the record. I'm not someone that goes for records unless I'm playing a video game. But in real life, I think it was the right decision. Rest Jamal. You don't need him in this one. Although, you know, for a while it looked like they were going to keep going with Charles, which I think is why partially Charles was still in there towards the end of the third quarter, because this became a game. At that point, it was 35-31 Kansas City, and then they scored with Jamal Charles' 71-yard touchdown pass, his 71-yard catch and run, which made it 42-31 Kansas City, and then from there they scored 2 more touchdowns, really 21 unanswered points to end the game. So it was a game there with Charles, but I think it was the right decision to take him out and not – they ran up the score, but not run up the score and get a record with Charles. Although I'm sure it angered some – I don't know if it anger is the right word, but perhaps maybe frustrated some fantasy owners if they needed even more points from Jamal Charles. I mean, what they got from him was an outstanding career day. I mean, it's unheard of, 5 touchdowns. Like I said, it hasn't happened in 10 years by anybody. But in some cases, maybe you needed even more. I know it's the fantasy playoffs. And I guess if you lost with that performance from Jamal Charles, man, the rest of your team maybe really struggled, or you're playing against a really, really good team. But other than fantasy purposes or a record chasing type scenario, I don't believe that, you know, you should go for records. You had the win secure. That was the right decision by Andy Reid. Other headlines from other games that I haven't gotten to mention. Michael Crabtree, he's been playing for a couple of weeks now, but he finally got into the end zone. Finally, somebody else caught a touchdown pass for the 49ers besides Vernon Davis and Anquan Boldin. The 49ers defeated the Tampa Bay Bucks 33-14. Buffalo beat Jacksonville 27-20. Seattle made a cross-country trip to New York City. They shut out the Giants 23-0. Little interesting fact here for the Seahawks. Their last 2 regular season games are at home. If they wrap up home field advantage, they will play the entire playoffs at home. The next road game they could play would be in the Super Bowl at Giants Stadium. Well, excuse me, sorry, Jet fans. MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. So the next time they go on the road, they really, very well could be back at that same stadium where they shut out the Giants 23-0. Big upset in Minnesota. The Vikings, with their third string running back, defeated the Eagles 48-30. That was a big surprise. Nick Foles and his comeback was just short. And that third string running back for the Vikings, Matt Asanta, before Sunday, I had never heard of that guy, I'll be honest. Toby Gerhardt and Adrian Peterson were both out with injuries. That's why he came up, and he actually had a really good game leading them to a victory. Indianapolis got, you know, playing the Texans. They won 25-3. They're a team that's really been struggling, so that was an important win to get for them. Kirk Cousins and the quarterback controversy not so fast in Washington. Atlanta won 27-26. That could have very easily been the quarterback discussion in the fourth and long segment rather than Jay Cutler, but figured I'd stay with the team that is actually competing for the playoffs. I mentioned the Panthers. They defeated the Jets 30-20. Arizona, a team that really does not get enough attention, they won in overtime, eliminating the Titans, beating them 37-34. We discussed all the other games in further depth. And don't forget, if you're listening on Monday, big Monday night game. I think this is the game of the week. The Ravens not defeated yet. The Ravens visiting the Lions on Monday Night Football. Here's another one from Billy Joel. Then we're going to come back and wrap up today's show. Billy Joel actually announced maybe 2 weeks ago or so that he will be having monthly concerts at MSG, so I thought it was fitting to get in a couple of songs by Billy, a guy that I have not seen in concert, definitely want to, and hope to get a chance to go see him as he's indefinitely having indefinite concert schedule at MSG until demand runs out is what they say. So I was very excited. I'm sure many other people were as well. To close out the show, I wanted to reference a article written by Michael Grabowski, the most overrated players of all 32 NFL teams. So what he goes through each NFL team and he picks one overrated player from each team. Now, I mean, you know, a lot of this is controversial. I think that's the point of the article, is to raise a discussion about who's overrated, underrated. I've always thought that overrated, underrated is a really hard thing to argue, because it's all about perception, and my perception of a player might be completely different about yours. So how can I say one's overrated and you know, based on my perception or versus yours? So anyway, obviously, it's very controversial. It's going to create a stir in the Football Nation community, but I think it's an article worth checking out. I would recommend it. And again, he picks a player from each team, so he has to pick somebody from the Broncos, or has to pick somebody from the Ravens, who won the Super Bowl, or a team that's really good like the Seahawks. He still picked a guy from each team. Some teams might not have a guy that's overrated, like, I mean, a Cleveland. I think kind of tough to pick a player that is overrated when they're a team that really doesn't get a lot of attention. But it's still really interesting piece and one that's definitely worth checking out. There's lots of stuff worth checking out on footballnation.com. My power rankings come out every Wednesday. I'm hoping to have another video come out on Friday. Tom Pollen has a terrible 10. The race for the number one pick, that article comes out every week around Thursday and Friday. I recommend checking out that. And don't forget FN Radio, they're live. That's Bill Enright and Todd DeFries every Tuesday and Thursday from 12 to 2. They answer your fantasy football questions, which I all hope that you're in your championship game this coming week. I hope that your league doesn't have the championship game in week 17. That would be awful. Hopefully you're still alive and fantasy coming to an end in the next 7 to 8 days. So definitely check out FN Radio for your latest fantasy football updates and really updates about the NFL as a whole during the week. We will be back here, same time, same place, Monday morning. Until then, I'm going to try to find some peace in my mind.